Okay, small group discussion. Is the oral contraceptive hormones and how they work? What I thought we might do is that I would speak for some time, then we can open this up for discussion. First, as we know, a completely new aspect has entered the field of contraception with the discovery of the oral hormones. The aspect is new because, first of all, a medical way was discovered for preventing conception. I should qualify that by saying that a new medical way was discovered because I, for example, in lecturing on contraception, have one lecture on contraception among the ancient Egyptians whose medical practice of contraception was quite subtle and rather advanced. But it's a new way of preventing conception medically. Moreover, the proponents of this method, why is it new? The proponents of this method have made contraception available and effective for millions that might otherwise not practice contraception. Moreover, what is brand new for the Catholic Church, and this is really where the contraceptive revolution began. Contraception had been practiced from the dawn of Christianity, that is, in the cultures in which Christianity was born. And never in the history of the Church has the Church ever permitted, quite the contrary, has always condemned contraception. And the whole sweep of Christian tradition is the same. The new element that entered was in 1963 when a man by the name of Janssens, J-A-N-S-S-E-N-S, in Belgium, published the first extensive and scholarly defense of contraception when the hormones are used. He announced, by the way, that he had the full backing of Cardinal Sunan. We can thank Cardinal Sunan for starting the contraceptive revolution. At any rate, from 63 on to today, the Catholic Church is now struggling, and this is both new and critical element. The Catholic Church is now being called upon to defend its position against contraception in the face of the oral hormones. What I'd like to do is first say just a little bit about the invention of the oral hormone, then a description of how it works, and for that I will use the blackboard after I give a verbal presentation. Then to see some of the medical effects of the hormone, quite apart from the fact that it does suppress ovulation. And fourthly, to evaluate the morality of the hormones themselves in terms of their contraceptive purpose, and then their morality in terms of the effect on the woman's body. Then some suggested readings on the subject, and a word or two of where do we go from here. First, something about the invention. There were separate experiments done by two doctors by the name of Pincus, P-I-N-C-U-S, and Chang. They working together at Worcester in Massachusetts, they discovered in experimenting on rats and rabbits that ovulation can be suppressed in female rats and rabbits by the injection of progesterone P-R-O-G-E-S-T-E-R-O-N-E, progesterone. In separate experimentation by Dr. Rock and company in 1950, the first made the discovery in 1951, Rock and company claimed to have discovered this in 1950, experimenting at Harvard on some 80 women, this time it's on human beings, who were childless. They discovered that the injection of progesterone and estrogen, E-S-T-R-O-G-E-N, can simulate pregnancy. In other words, by the injection of these two drugs in the woman's body, her condition is that of a woman who is pregnant in many ways. Thus, her menstruation stops. There is no ovulation. The ovulatory cycle stops. And her breasts are prepared for lactation, for nursing. Also, the uterus, the lining of the uterus, is ready for what they call nidation, for the nesting of the fetus. They further discovered that when they suddenly withdrew those two drugs, progesterone and estrogen, in 13 out of the 80 women who were childless, this should be said, the 80 women were childless, and apparently for several years had attempted, by all the known means, to have a child and couldn't conceive, 13 of the 80 on withdrawal of these drugs, and of course, with intercourse, they became pregnant. Those two findings, therefore, are the beginning. Notice how recent that is, 50 and 51. So much for the invention. That is the beginning of it. You will notice immediately that what they discovered was that these two drugs, progesterone and estrogen, whatever they do to a woman, somehow simulate pregnancy and have a lot to do with her ovulatory cycle. Now, in the analysis of how they work, what I plan to do is go through 10 steps. Now I will use letters to identify the hormones. This, by the way, this is the nature of this particular lecture. It's quite technical. I should add that part of my background before I went into theology was to finish my master's work in biochemistry. And as a consequence, I feel very comfortable in handling the physiology. The basic principle behind how the oral hormones work is that endocrine glands in the woman's body both stimulate and inhibit fertility. I should add immediately, these two hormones are the distinctive female hormones. They have their counterpart in the man with effects that are characteristic of the male gender. What is the cycle of how they work? Step number one. Everything begins in the pituitary gland, which releases FSH. Let me just give you the letters and then we will put them on the board and further amplify. And LH, two hormones. The effect of these hormones released by the pituitary is to stimulate the ovaries. Step number two. the stimulated ovaries produce estrogen, E. So the stimulated ovaries produce E. Step number 3. The ovary produced E, or estrogen, stimulates or re-stimulates the pituitary to an increased production of LH. Step number 4, which is less a step than a fact. An ideal combination which differs for each woman, and only, of course, during her years of fertility. An ideal combination different for each woman of FSH and LH causes ovulation. Ovulation is the preparation of the ovum to ripen it, release it, and make it available for fertilization. Step number 5. The LH released by the pituitary and further stimulated by the estrogen causes what is called luteinization. Luteinization. L-U-T-E-I-N-I-Z-A-T-I-O-N. Now the luteization is a complicated process, may be described as the preparation of the womb. So the ovulation is to prepare the ovum to ripen it for fertilization. The LH causes luteinization to prepare the uterus for the reception of, if it should take place, the fertilized ovum. Obviously, if no fertilization takes place, the ripened but non-fertilized ovum and the lining of the uterus are released, and that, of course, is the monthly menses. Number 6, and this is the big one. A high quantity or a large quantity of E, of estrogen, stimulates the production of L. We're going to identify these letters by the pituitary. This stops the further production for the time being of FSH. Now this is the big step, 6. A high degree of estrogen, of E, stimulates the production of L by the pituitary. This L released by the pituitary stops or checks temporarily the FSH, and as a consequence, ovulation ceases until, of course, the next month when the cycle starts over again. Step 7. L stimulates the ovaries, this is L now, along with what is called the corpus luteum, which is abbreviated CL. What is the corpus luteum? It is the sac which encloses the released ovum, which is called a follicle, and it is within this sac that the ripening of the ovum takes place. It is called the corpus luteum, or the yellow body, because it happens to be yellow in color. Now, the L which stimulates the ovaries, along with this corpus luteum, the follicle within which the ripening ovum is encased, produce together progesterone, or P. Step number 8. And 8 along with 6 are the reasons why there are such things as contraceptive hormones. Like 6, high E stops FSH, P, progesterone, on being produced in a sufficient quantity, stops LH. And you remember, it's FSH and LH originally produced by the pituitary, which starts the process. Progesterone, or P then, step number 8, stops the LH. The FSH has already been stopped by the E. Now the LH is stopped. The pituitary stops producing, under the influence of progesterone, its LH. And as a consequence, the corpus luteum, the yellow body, regresses. In other words, it begins to disintegrate. By that time, the ovum will have been released and awaits fertilization and is active for maybe 7 to 12 hours only. Number 9, step 9. The regression of this yellow body, sloughed off by the ovum, which encased the follicle, encased the ovum, the regression of this yellow body causes a rapid decrease of estrogen and progesterone because the job was done. In other words, the ovulatory cycle was stopped, and if no fertilization took place, no male sperm fertilized the ovum, then you have menstruation, releasing both the unfertilized ovum and the prepared lining of the uterus, which would have been ready for nidation had there been a fetus or fertilized ovum entering the uterus. Step number 10 and the last, FSH. Once the release of the unused ovum and the uterine lining, once the release takes place, then FSH begins to increase in the pituitary along with the LH. There is a decrease of E, or estrogen, and another monthly cycle starts over again. Now let me put this, it may look, if you don't mind, it might be of some help, because the physiology of this has a lot to do with the morality of it. So this is the cycle where the pituitary is on top. Pieces. F, S, H, and L. We are given names for these, for all of these, when we get to this. Then there are, I have 1, 2, 3, 4 stages. 1, 2, 3, 4. This is called the follicularization. In other words, the purpose of the follicle, which encloses the ovum, to maturate it and prepare it for fertilization. This is the ovulation proper, which of course has to do with the ovaries. And this, my design is something like this. This is the uterus, the preparation for nidation. So follicularization, ovulation, and nidation, the preparation of the uterus. Now, this, by the way, this full lecture takes about an hour and a half, and I don't want to get lost in needless detail, so I will cut down on some items. Let me first put the design of the board such as it is. Number four. Estrogen. Remember, what I'm just trying to do, I'm going over what I said before, right? It's just to put it into some kind of a context. Here and up to here. The effect, remember what we said about the estrogen, what it does. Now, the pituitary also releases ill and some LH on this side. Then I have 5, 6, and 7. Let me first put the thing in an explain. The terms. FSH is the medical term for the follicle stimulating hormone. FSH, the follicle stimulating hormone. LH, the luteal, L-U-T-E-L, hormone, or the luteinizing hormone, the hormone which causes the production of the yellow body. E is estrogen. L is the lactogenic hormone, the milk-producing hormone, L. CL is the corpus luteum. P is progesterone. Now, without going into any more physiological analysis, let me just say what is the essential thing as far as the oral contraceptive hormones go. It is steps number 4 and 5 here that are crucial. In step number 4, high estrogen, as previously described, stimulates the pituitary to make the lactogenic hormone, which stops FSH. The lactogenic hormone stimulates the ovaries to produce progesterone. And step number 5, progesterone stops LH, the luteal hormone, the preparation of the yellow body. It stops the LH through the pituitary. Now, inasmuch as, and here's the big one, inasmuch as the whole ovulatory cycle depends upon the release of FSH and LH by the pituitary, since estrogen and progesterone stop, they are known naturally. This is the normal, natural cycle. Since they are the things that stop the production of FSH and LH, without which there is no ovulation, if, and here's the thing, if you can put artificially into the female body E and P, estrogen and progesterone, over and above, way beyond, and keep it constantly in her body, then the ovulatory cycle can never get going. Is that clear? At least from what we can explain in this context. Consequently, all oral hormones, and I brought with me, and I could read you, the list of the 31 that are currently on the market. They are either estrogen or progesterone or generally combinations of each. They may be taken in a variety of ways, but most conveniently they are taken orally. Let me read from a standard book on contraception. Here is one produced by the Ortho Pharmaceutical Corporation in Raritan, New Jersey. This is their text on how their hormones are to be used. It is called Ortho Novum, the technical name. And they have a long chemical description which is irrelevant to us, but contains progesterone and estrogen. Indication, oral contraception. Dosage and administration. The dosage of Orthonovum, 1 milligram, is one tablet administered daily from the 5th through the 24th day of each menstrual cycle, counting the first day of menstrual flow as day 1. This, by the way, is a little complicated, and not everybody. They've got to make sure. People, for example, who say that those who use the oral contraceptives don't have to know some mathematics, don't know oral contraceptives. And you better make sure you take the right dose at the right time of the cycle, in the right sequence. Some are more complicated. Here's one, for example. Listen to this. This is another one. The dosage of this one for contraception is one tablet administered daily from the 5th through the 24th day of each menstrual cycle, counting the first day of menstrual flow as day 1. One tablet daily from day 5 through day 24 is recommended for treatment of certain conditions. Following 3 months of treatment, medication may be discontinued to determine the need for further therapy. So it may be used in two ways. At any rate, each drug is built on the premise that by putting into the female body either E or P, estrogen or progesterone or both, you can check those two hormones without which ovulation doesn't even begin. All ovulation starts with the pituitary. Now the effects. In order to evaluate the effects of the oral hormones, we've got to distinguish between the effects in terms of ovulation and the effects in terms of the medication. In other words, these drugs had for years, before they were discovered to be contraceptives, effects on the woman's body for which they were used as therapy. It was quite coincidental that they were discovered to also be contraceptive. On the first level, then, what is the effect on the woman's body and then in immediate moral evaluation? As of 1969, and I try to keep up with the literature, in fact, my first love was science. I have since, of course, got quite theological. But I try to keep up on the literature and working, as I think I mentioned, on a reference book along with Dr. Cavanaugh, doing the medical side and I the theological. We exchange. He gives me the medical literature and I give him the theological. Medical science is not fully sure yet exactly what happens inside the woman's body when these drugs take place or are administered. What they're absolutely sure of, that if taken according to prescription, A woman doesn't conceive, that they know. It's like you're absolutely sure that when you give a person even 1 gram of cyanide, he dies. You're absolutely sure he dies. Just why he died, well, that's not yet fully known to medical science. So what they're sure of is that conception won't take place. There are 3 current theories on what happens. Why, in other words, a woman does not, and the word is not quite correct, I want to correct myself, not won't conceive, but won't bring to term, will not, in other words, become pregnant. The first theory is that women taking the oral hormones are known on experimentation to quite radically change the cervical mucus in their bodies, which is normally quite fluid, to becoming a thick mass, becomes heavy, viscous. And also, chemical tests of that mucus show that it is spermicidal. And as a consequence, what they know is that since the cervical mucus changes, both physically in its much thickened viscosity and chemically in making it difficult, if not impossible, for spermatozoa to survive for any length of time in that cervical mucus. It then, now I'm speaking from the moral viewpoint, since the spermatozoa are either stopped in their tracks by being caught in the viscous cervical mucus, or they are killed because of the chemical composition of that mucus, it acts as a contraceptive. Now there are, as I'm sure you know, all sorts of contraceptives which do precisely that. They are generally in the form of